this is Neil Funk, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello, this is Nick Friedel, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye. Hi, this is Chuck Swirsky, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye.
I'm Bob Love of the Chicago Bulls, and you listen to Freddie.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye. Well, the lottery is over. Are you feeling better? Are you over it yet? Are you still bummed because this is only a two-player draft and we have no hope? Or have you realized, like I knew before and after the draft, if you study these drafts long enough, you should come to the following conclusions. Number one, there's going to be more than two good players in this draft. Number two, one of these players is going to be available when the Bulls draft. And number three, when the Bulls pick in the top 10, they usually make good picks. They've had eight of them under packs. They've hit on seven. So I'm feeling a lot better, and I know, hey, it's absolutely disappointing that we missed out on Zion. I think he's a sure thing. I think Ja Morant is as close to a sure thing as you can also get at number two. But I think there's some very good players left, and I think we're going to hopefully get one of them. And as I said before this draft, I'm one of the few who believe that the core of LaVine, Wendell Carter Jr., and Laurie Mark are good enough to become a title contender with progression in the next few years. So to me, this pick always has been gravy, and we'll see where it comes. But I think it's a special kind of combination of negativity, maybe narcissism, and ignorance to say it's a two-player draft right now and be absolutely sure of it with no questions in May. Like, who knows? Who knows how these kids are going to progress? Who knows where they're going to be? If you look at the players left in the playoffs right now, was there anyone who thought Kawhi was going to be what he is today when he was drafted at 15 in year one or two? How about Giannis at 15? I mean, the great Sam Hinkie, he picked Noel and Michael Carter-Williams. He was the only GM to pick those two players ahead of Giannis. And we know he's the most, allegedly the most intelligent GM in the history of the universe. So if he passed up on Giannis twice, you know this is a difficult process, right? Drafting or knowing how these players are going to end up. How about Klay Thompson at 11 or Dame Lillard at 6 or CJ McCollum at 10? You can go on and on. Steph at 7. You know, what is true is most stars are picked in the top 10. That's an absolute true fact. Out of the top 15 NBA, all-NBA players last season, 13 were picked in the top 10. So we'll be picking top 10, and you can still find stars between 6 and 10. Paul George was at 10. It's not like this, there's no hope that we're going to get a really good player, a good to potentially great player at 7. I'm a huge fan of DeAndre Hunter. I'm not going to go in depth the reasons why. We got several weeks before the draft, and we're going to have a lot of shows that go in depth on the reasons why I think he's the pick for 7. But we're going to have other opinions in with Keith Franz and the great basketball historian Tim Gallagher. There's going to be a lot of people going to bring their opinions to who the Bulls should draft at 7. But until then, my God, please stop with this is hopeless. The Bulls suck. There's no hope. We're stuck in basketball hell because it's not even remotely true. I tweeted this, and I firmly believe this. If you're still bummed about last Tuesday, pick five random stars left in the playoffs and look at their numbers in year two of their career. And then look at Larry's numbers in year two of his career and have some faith that the kid's going to get better. Because his numbers in year two, for almost unequivocally, are significantly better than every great player that's left in the playoffs right now. So, you know, is that going to be a guarantee he's going to be a superstar? Of course not. No, it's not. I think at worst he's going to be a good player in the NBA. But at best, I think this guy has legit top 10 potential. And some disagree. But if you watch the playoffs and you see how the game is going, you got to have shooting. And if you have a big man who's 6'10", who can rise over anyone, shoot, and extend defenses and give his teammates room to rot, that's what you're looking for. Everybody's waxing poetic about Draymond Green. He's absolutely played great in these playoffs, no denying that. I never said he wasn't a good player. I think he's an overrated player, but I think he's a good player. Very good on the defensive end. But one thing, unless you're blind and you can't notice, I am shocked at how much room Draymond Green has to operate. It's unbelievable for a player of his good to great status is never doubled, and he's always has sometimes 5, 6, 7 feet before there's a defender in the vicinity. There was a play at the end of game 3 where it was a pick and roll with Steph Curry, and he dished it off to after Draymond, and there wasn't a player within 8 feet of him, and he drove the lane, made the right decision with an alley-oop for a dunk to Looney, I believe. But just watch the game and see how aggressively defenses run out on Clay and run out on Steph. I would argue that there's never been a good to great player in the history of the game who has more room to operate than Draymond Green on the offensive end. Defensively, he's an absolute stud. No arguments here. But he would look drastically different on any other team that does not have two players that shoot that well. And I don't know if you're ever going to find a team in the history of the league that are going to have players like Klay Thompson and Steph Curry on the same team. It's insane that those two guys are on the exact same team. And just the gravity that those players have is insane to me. And Klay Thompson, I think, was in game two in third quarter, had a stretch where he hit about three or four threes in the third quarter. And I don't think I've ever seen a team run out that hard to contest shots. It was full sprint. When you have a defender going full sprint, running away from the basket continually, like teams are guarding Klay Thompson or guarding, picking him up at 35 feet, it frees up everything for everyone else. And players like Draymond Green, who can handle the ball and have talent, you give those guys enough room to work, it's a catastrophe for the Blazers. So, you know, this series is over. But regardless, the big picture, what I'm trying to get at is, I think the Bulls and Lauri Markkanen have the potential to have a player, a big man, who shoots at that level. Obviously, he's not going to ever be as good as Clay or Steph, but he has a tremendous shooting ceiling, I think about a 40% from three-point range. And if he can develop that and hit that number, oh, my God, there's going to be lanes for the rest of the team to rim rock. It's a pretty simple game when you get down to it. You need to space the floor. That's what the Bulls did horribly last year. For 2 months without their best players, and Laurie's trying to get back in shape after his injury. And when you bring back Denzel Valentine and hopefully we'll add another shooter in the draft, we get some modicum of health, and we're going to really do some great things, I think, in the following season and in the seasons to come. So we'll see where we go. Regardless, please, everyone, get off the ledge and stop acting like this is the end of the world. You know, one final story before we get into my interview with Paul Connor of Bulls Twitter fame. I used to have a job in Nabisco plant in the south side of Chicago that got me through school. I was extremely grateful for that job. If I didn't have that job, I wouldn't have been able to pay for my college. And it was something that, you know, it was not an easy job. Basically, anytime there was a pallet in a truck that was knocked over, I and the other college guys by hand unload the entire pallet of different foods and either remove it from the truck or put it back together. And to put it mildly, in the summer, the temperature inside that truck often probably approached 120 degrees. It was a difficult job. But for the most part, everyone who was there joked around, had fun, talked Bulls. It was great, except for one guy. We'll say his name is Mitch. I'm not going to give his real name. It's something close to Mitch. And Mitch had the easiest job out of all of us, and all he did was complain 24/7. Anytime we saw him, Mitch was complaining. Luckily, we only saw him for about 15 minutes a day at lunch, and we didn't have to deal with it anymore. But I've never met anyone so negative, so irritating. Everybody was out to get him. We weren't making enough money. This job sucked. What, you know, life sucks. This kid's like 19 years old. I have no idea what he's doing today. I would never want to be that guy's friend. You know, from the day we quit the job, nobody ever wanted to talk to him because he was just completely negative. And I'm sure you've all met people like that in your life. I've never met anybody quite like this guy who just literally every word out of his mouth was a complaint. Regardless, I think, unfortunately, a huge part of the Bulls fan base has become like Mitch, a perfect representation of this guy, Mitch, where every single move the Bulls do is a mistake. Everything sucks. There's no hope. Lauri Markkanen's ceiling is good at best good. Zach LaVine is a loser. Every single comment, every single thing you see on Twitter, and I think, you know, people who follow the Bulls will know who these guys are, is a negative thing. All the mistakes, highlighting the four or five mistakes that they made over the course of the last 15 years. You never hear about all the great draft picks that they made in the 20s at 30. You never hear a listing of those. But there's just four or five mistakes that the Bulls have had over the 15 years. Just throw it up there on the board and not at all consider context. Yeah, it's just, like I said, a big part of the group is just completely negative. And it's frankly irritating. It's just, it's some level, it's got to stop. I don't want to deal with those people anymore. I probably say about 40-50% of the emails I get are explanations of why the Bulls are terrible. And I disagree with a lot of it. I think what it comes down to why last year was a complete disaster was because we had six injuries to the major rotation players, six significant injuries to major rotation players that kept them out for large swaths of the season, in Denzel Valentine's case, the entire season. And that had a massive effect on why the Bulls were not good last year. I brought this up, the top six guys in terms of minutes for the Bulls this past season. Number one, excuse me, games, not minutes, games. Games played, Ryan, Archidiacono, 81 games. Robin Lopez was 2 with 74. Shaq Harrison was 3 with 73. Just stop there for a second. Two to our top three guys, we for most people probably expected they would be playing for Windy City Bulls, and they were leading our team in games played. Fourth was Zach LaVine at 63. He still missed, you know, almost 19 games, almost 20 games. Almost a quarter of the season. Felicio, 60. At number five, and Antonio Blakeney at 57. Those were our top six guys in terms of games played. Now, if you replace those, five of those six, of course, we hope Levine's up there, hopefully with a higher total amount of games played. If you replace those guys with Laurie, Wendell Carter Jr., Otto, Pat Beverly, you know, then the final one, maybe Hutch or Denzel Valentine or the number one pick or Taj Gibson or Ed Davis. I don't care. Whatever free agent we sign with the $20 million we have out there, you replace those five or six and suddenly things are going to look significantly better, like double our wins better. It's just a simple thing. If we get health, we're going to be a vastly improved team. And I would say not just approaching a very good team, good to very good. Very quickly, because I really believe in some of these young players. That said, here's the interview with Paul Connor. I'm going to be featuring over the next few weeks or for the rest of the summer occasional interviews with who I call fixtures of Bulls Twitter. Paul Connor is one of those guys I like to chat with, who I think have a generally positive disposition on the future of the team. You know, if you want negative going forward, you know where to find it. And I'm not going to be blindly positive. I'm going to say if I'm not happy about a move. Absolutely. And as I've done in the past, as I was about, you know, Justin Holiday, and I was very unhappy about how the Bulls handled Jabari Parker. But in general, I'm going to bring on people on Twitter that I found that I think have a general positive viewpoint, because all we hear is negative across the board on almost every podcast I listen to. So I want to be the one place where the sky isn't falling and we're going to focus on the potential of our young players in the future of this team. So Paul Connor, I hope you enjoyed this interview. Keep in mind, this was recorded about a week before the lottery. So some of the stuff very few of it's dated. Everything I'm doing right now pretty much is something that I'll ask questions that are relevant at least up until the draft. So hopefully you get some good nuggets in there. But until next time, all the best, my fellow Bulls fans. Stay positive. Have faith that things are going to get better, because I can guarantee you they will. All the best to you, brothers and sisters. Follow me on Twitter at CBEFred. Email the show, ChicagoBullseye@gmail.com, ChicagoBullseye@gmail.com. I'm going to have a number of great guests over the next couple of weeks. One of them, of course, the great David Kaplan, later this week, is going to have a special show, and we'll get on to the topics later, but there's a couple of interesting things that he's going to come and talk about. So hope you enjoy it. All the best to you.
Hi, this is Neil Funk, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello, this is Nate Friedel, and you're listening to Fred on the Chicago Bullseye. Hi, this is Chuck Swirsky, and you're listening to Fred on the Chicago Bullseye.
I'm Bob Love of the Chicago Bulls, and you listen to Freddie.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to a very special edition of Chicago Bullseye. As we approach the lottery and the draft, we're going to have a couple exciting episodes with what I call Bulls Twitter fixtures, people that I've communicated with over the years on Bulls Twitter. One of my favorite is Paul Connor. Paul, how are you doing?
I'm good, Fred. How are you?
Oh, living the dream. We've been talking about doing this for a while. I mean, we've been communicating probably, what, 5, maybe 10 years? It seems like a long time on Twitter that I've been talking to you, and it's good to finally bring you on the Chicago Bullseye, and I'd love to get your opinion on some of the timely topics at hand about the beloved Bull. How you been, number one? And number two, let's get a little bit of your history. You're a little 411 as a Bulls fan.
I've been a Bulls fan all my life, going back to, obviously, the Jordan days, living through that first horrible rebuild under Tim Floyd, you know, the guys like Dalibor Bogorić and Dragan Tarlok.
Oh,
you know,
God.
Corey Benjamin, Corey Carp, Mark Bryant, you know, Andrew Lang, you know, those guys.
Getting nauseous here. Every day you rattle off, you know, is just awful.
Going through the, you know, the baby bulls with Tyson and Eddie and, you know, Scott Skiles and him getting fired and, up to present bulls. So, you know, I'm like you. I see red. You know, I try to go as many games as I possibly can. So,
big
bulls in here.
Is it possible, Paul? You know, I love communicating with you because I definitely think you're one of the more positive, one of the few positive lights on Twitter. Everything around the Bulls is so overtly negative. And I understand, you know, everything's not roses here, but to me, it's nowhere remotely near what it was like in 2099, 2000, 2001, you know, 2002, where it was just unending series of awful teams that had no hope. You know, they did have some young talent, but Elton Brand was traded away basically for Tyson Chandler, who was, you know, many years away from being a contributing ball player. I don't know. Do you think going through that maybe leaves you a little bit more positive than I think a lot of the younger fans who are just so overtly negative? It's almost laughable.
Yeah, you know, I think it does, and I'm going to bring up a name, and mostly, and you know, this guy, I know he gets killed a lot on Twitter and various social media outlets. I really do like the job that John Paxson has done over his tenure as Bulls Vice President of Operations. The talent he's accumulated over the years, yes, he probably should have let go of some of the talent to make trades, but that's neither here nor there. But the fact that right now he's, you know what you get from him, the fact that he's taking charge of this rebuild gives me a little bit more of an better outlook, I suppose, if it was Gar Foreman or anybody else that was taking control of this rebuild.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think overall they've been unfairly maligned as, you know, anytime I see anyone talk about how bad they've drafted, they don't know what they're talking about. As far as front offices and drafting, the Bulls are up there with Oklahoma City and Golden State in the past decade of having some of the best, you know, or 10 to 15 years, some of the best drafts. Jimmy Butler is arguably the best pick in the last decade, value pick at 30, along with Draymond Green, the second round for Golden State. You know, and the fact that he's drafted two number one first team all NBA players, and Jakeem Noah and Rose, is just a testament to their ability to draft. And I think they consistently have found talent in the 20s. And if it's Taj Gibson or Nico Mirotic, you know, or even Jimmy Butler at 30, you know, no front office is perfect, but I think overall they, as far as drafting goes, they've done, I think, a pretty solid job.
Yeah, I mean, if you even go back to the guys that they haven't drafted. I mean, I saw something on your feed where you talked about how Jordan Bell is going to be out the league in a couple of years. I wholeheartedly agree with you. I mean, if you're a guy that can't get playing time over Kevin Looney after DeMarcus Cousins get hurt, yeah, then you probably shouldn't be in the league.
I understand the viewpoint. I know most people would counter, well, you shouldn't have traded the pick. Hey, that issue is going to be with whatever front office is here. So, like, I don't know why you're mad at Pax about that. That has a lot more to do with ownership than it does to do with the front office. And I think they've had, you know, greater limitations than some other big market front offices. I don't think there's any question about that.
Sure. I definitely agree with that. Jerry Reinsdorf could be a little bit more, let's say, not more involved in terms of the organization, I'm sure the Sun wants to build a winner, but I think Jerry needs to back off a little bit.
Yeah, I think they're, you know, overall, I have a hard time just ripping on Reinsdorf just because we won six titles and the Bulls have brought me more joy than any organization in Chicago, any team, and it's not even remotely close. So I'm not one of those people that reflexively rips on him. They've done a lot of good in the community. I love the organization overall. But, you know, as far as that trade specifically by Jordan Bell, that to me, as I said, is just, you can't criticize front office for it just because, as I said before, it's an issue with whoever's running this team.
But the thing with me is that trade didn't necessarily bother me. I understood the reason why they did it.
Yeah. Well, I'll be honest, that trade bothered me just because, I don't know if you remember my Twitter feed, I was a big fan of Jordan Bell defensively. I thought he was probably the best player I saw in college basketball that year on the defensive end. But it's clear that he is not a very mature kid for whatever reason. He's got, you know, he's not good enough, nearly good enough to lose sleep over the fact that, you know, he's not on the Bulls. Because I'm fine with him not being here, and I don't think he would be. What's he going to do, play ahead of Larry Markin and Wendell Carter Jr.? You know, no. So it's fine that he's not part of the Bulls, so.
Absolutely.
Let's get on some of the other timely topics. Let's start out with this one. Let's assume that the Bulls get the number two pick. And, you know, so we're not going to get Zion, but we get number two, and we have our choice of a number of players there. Who would you like to see them draft at that position?
You take Dye. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind. A dynamic point guard that can do it all. Shoot, defend, drive to the basket, a dynamic player that can definitely change the franchise. You pair him along with, you know, an athletic Zach LaVine, a healthy Larry Markkanen. You know, you move Chris Dunn to the bench, assuming that you keep him. You know, you have Wendell Carter Jr. as well as, you know, the many other players. That team, you know, could be young and exciting. That team could win, you know, 40 games just by his presence alone and what he's able to do on the basketball court. You know, full disclosure, I picked Murray State to go to Sweet 16 just because of John Morant. And unfortunately, it didn't happen, but, you know, one player can make a difference. And after Zion Williamson, he's that guy. He's that franchise changing type of player that will help this franchise since Derek. And I know I'm stepping out big on that, but that's my personal opinion.
I agree with you. He's clearly, to me, the number two player in this draft. I'm not done, you know, watching all the videos that I usually get prepared for the draft, but to me, he clearly, there's a huge fit at that position for the Bulls, and I think it's close enough with everywhere else. I think John Morant is probably the second best player in this draft. I don't know if he's going to finish up that way. You know, there's a lot of people who are in love with Garland. Well, really quickly, before we get to if they end up at number three, who would you pick? What is your take on Garland, and do you like him as a potential player to get if you fall between, let's say, four and seven?
You know, the funny thing is about Darius Garland is that I've seen comparisons anywhere between Tyler Ulis and Damian Lillard.
Yeah.
So
pretty big.
I don't know where I fall in line with that because I haven't seen enough of him to play. Five games is not enough for me to see, especially when he plays in a tough conference like the, you know, the SEC. So I have to, you know, see more of him at maybe at the pre-draft camp, maybe some more videos I can look at on YouTube, but I need to see more out of Darius Garland because he's one of those where, and he might be one of those players that can get a front office fired.
I love his shooting ability, but I every time I see 175 pounds, I just think, man, that kid's going to have trouble on the other end of the court. That's the thing about Trae Young. Trae Young was fantastic offensively, but in almost every advanced metric I saw, he's one of the worst five defenders in the NBA. Are you really going to win with Zach LaVine and another poor point guard defensively? You know, and I know some people are screaming at me, well, is John Morant that much better? I think John Morant has a significantly higher defensive ceiling than Darius Garland.
Well, I think what helps Morant is the fact that his wingspan is fairly long. So, I mean, you and John Morant's like 6'3", 6'4". I mean, and he's super athletic. When you're super athletic, there shouldn't be any reason why you can't play a lick.
Yeah, and I keep on saying that, though, but then you look at Zach and, you know, like, it's so frustrating to me because I agree with you 100%. If you have athleticism and want to, when the game is on the line, you should be able to at least bring average defense. That's a minimum you should expect. And I just don't understand why, you know, Zach doesn't bring it more consistently. Regardless, I still love the kid offensively.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so
absolutely.
We'll see what happens. If they end up at three, who would you like them to see the Bulls take at three?
I think it has to be R.J. Barrett. I mean, another guy who's athletic, who's young, you know, can shoot the basketball a little bit, you know, but it's just one of those where, honestly, after those first two picks, it drops off. I mean, if the Bulls pick at three and Jai isn't there, I'm more inclined to trade back and get another asset, me personally. Because I think the Bulls are in a position where they need to collect assets. And that's, in order for this rebuild to work, they need to collect as many assets as possible.
If the Bulls, if the Bulls draft Ja or, let's say, Darius Garland or another one of the point guards, you know, White from North Carolina, are you comfortable with the team going in the next season with Dunn, the rookie point guard, and let's say Shaq Harrison or Ryan A as your point guard core? Or do you feel, though, they must, even if they draft a point guard with the number one pick, that they must get a sign an unrestricted free agent to play the point?
I'm almost thinking that they have to go out and get a veteran guy. They need a veteran point guard. As much as I like Chris Dunn, I know you are 1 foot on the Dunn Island. I think they need to go out and get a veteran point guard. And I was actually looking at some of those, before we got on, and the guy that intrigues me outside of Patrick Beverley, who fits the mold of what the Bulls are looking for in terms of, you know, having toughness, is probably, you know, a Corey Joseph, who fits the role of a pure backup point guard. And that's what I think the Bulls need. And truth be told, and I haven't heard anything, what exactly are the Bulls looking for in a point guard? I haven't heard John Paxson specifically come out and say what they're looking for. Are they looking for a facilitator? Are they looking for a guy, you know, like a Derrick Rose in his prime that can just take over games? What are they looking for?
I think, without a doubt, Patrick Beverley is everything that they're looking for. A guy who sets the tone on both ends of the court, a tough player. Defensively, he brings it every night. He's not afraid to take challenging assignments. He's a plus defender. He's actually a much better three-point shooter than most people realize. He's, you know, right around 37%, I think, for his career. A good facilitator, a guy who doesn't need to be ball dominant, which is exactly what I think you need on this team when Zach handles the ball so much. Right. The issue I'm starting to have is I've loved Patrick Beverley, I think, longer than anyone else. I listened to a lot of podcasts. I was talking about him in December, how much I wanted him on the Bulls. I don't know if I want him at $16 million a year or $15 million a year.
This team is going to have, you know, roughly $20 million in cap space. So they have to go bargain shopping. So I think a guy like, you know, Corey Joseph or even a Darren Collison might be two guys within that price range.
See, my issue, I understand those guys. I've heard Collison. A lot of people have mentioned Collison. And Corey Joseph is the first. You're the first one to mention his name to me. And I think he's an upgrade, let's say, on a Shaq Harrison. I don't know if he's that much of an upgrade that I'd be willing to pay a lot more for him. Like, I really like Shaq Harrison. I think Shaq Harrison defensively is fantastic.
I agree.
He's a good either backup or third string point guard. And if you're drafting a point guard and you're done still on this roster, that's where the issue to me is I don't want Dunn to be traded. I think Dunn at worst is going to be a great backup point guard. At best, he's going to rise to the occasion, become a quality starter in this league. I don't think he's that far away. And that's my issue, is if you bring in a vet, it better be a vet who's going to start. And there's only a few guys that I would prefer to see start ahead of Dunn or whoever they draft, let's say. I think they might be better off if they draft a point guard to just run in and out with Dunn, this whoever they draft as the backup, and then Harrison or Ryan A as the third stringer. It's a tough question, you know, because, I mean, are we willing to take that chance that Dunn's not going to progress again or have another year like he did last year? You know, I personally think Dunn is a little bit better than he's shown last year, especially. I think he, you know, but it's a tough call. It really is.
Yeah, I don't know what exactly happened with him last year. I was pretty excited the year before, you know, especially when he came back from his first injury the first year. Mm-hmm. Stuff that he's shown the athletic ability. I thought at times last year he showed that he can get to the basket and finish, but his finishing rate at the rim is still below standards. And I know John Paxson has talked about that frequently, how he needs to get better at finishing at the rim.
Yeah, it was clear, I think, that the team has kind of moved on probably from Dunn, but I'm hoping that they give him one more chance. And we'll see. You know, we'll know pretty quick because I think they're going to move him for next to nothing if they made that decision. But I think he could be one of the best backups in the league or still even a quality starter if he just stays healthy. To me, that's the biggest thing. I think everything last year was put behind because he missed so much time.
Well, that's his whole team. This whole team needs to stay healthy.
Yeah, so Boylan, let's get into Jim Boylan. Your thoughts on Coach Jim. Where do you land on the Jim Boylan spectrum? There's a lot of a pretty wide berth of feelings towards Coach.
Well, I think you and I talked right after Fred was fired, and I didn't like how he was, you know, coaching the team, you know, being a hard ass, and can I say ass on the podcast?
Oh, yeah, it's no problem.
it seems that the players responded to him well, especially during that 12-game stretch, especially after the Otto Porter trade, that they started to respond and buy into what he was preaching. You know, their defense wasn't exactly the greatest at times, but offensively they were great. I think they had the top five in offensive efficiency, beating the Warriors. But you know, I just think that, you know, expect the players buying in, especially Zach. You know, I love Zach, but everyone knows Zach can be a little prima donna at times. But the fact that he bought in and I think some of the fans and some of the media have bought in as well. I'm willing to give him a chance at a full season, not necessarily giving him a contract extension, but giving him a chance to see what he can do with a full roster, and a full off season to implement what he wants to implement on both sides of the court.
Yeah, I think I think it's interesting that he's still, this extension still hasn't been announced for him. That's a kind of a side note, which I find somewhat interesting. I think if we start out poorly again next year, he'll probably go. And I'd be shocked if we do, but this team clearly to me should be much better if they're remotely healthy. And I expect them at a minimum to be a 500 team. I think anybody in the management should expect that. The team was just decimated by injuries, the six rotation players last year. And I understand why they only won 22 games. And by the end of the year, they weren't even really trying. They're just trying to put themselves in the Zion position. But another number one draft pick, you should have significantly cut this rebuild short in that trade, the Butler trade, by getting, you know, two significant assets in Lauri Markkanen and Zach LaVine and Dunn as a distant third.
Right.
And then you hit another homer last year, I think, with Wendell Carter Jr. If you bring a contributing player this year, we should be significantly better. I'm not a guy who believes in a 5 or 6 or 7 year quote-unquote process. That's nonsense to me. So I definitely am going to give Boylan the benefit of doubt. I thought he did some nice things in February. I thought January was a disgrace, and I mean, December was a joke, and the way he handled Parker was a big mistake. But
I think how the organization handled that whole Parker situation was pretty bad, and I understood the reasons why they did it, gathering another young asset, but at that time you needed players, you needed scores, and for him not to be playing that stretch of games in late November, December was just asinine from front office and coaching.
Yeah, it was an embarrassment, and no doubt about it. You couldn't have had a worse, you know, first couple of weeks where you basically almost have a mutiny. But I think it was pretty calm after that, and things got much significantly better in February with the Porter trade. I just can't wait. What was the most frustrating aspect of last season to you?
The injuries. I mean, you start out training camp with all this optimism, and the second most, well, could be your first, you know, most important player in this team gets hurt in practice, gets hurt in a going up for a rebound. Yeah. And that's the most frustrating thing, because we don't know what this team is because they haven't stayed healthy. And, you know, I don't want to live through another season where I'm going to a Bulls game and they're top three players or you know, they're the top two who are the essential to that Jimmy Butler trade are sitting on street clothes. Or their two draft picks from last year sitting in street clothes because they're hurt. That's just not good for the fandom. You know, this team needs to improve. You know, but the injuries were the frustrating thing. The aspect of you know, Fred being fired, you know, it as a Bulls fan, it's frustrating because this team should be so much better. They have the pieces. Zach LaVine, I think, is a top 25 player in this league. But the injuries last year was probably the most frustrating part of it.
I agree 100%. And the fact that they, you know, the three best players on the team, I think, played a grand total of 15 games together. And Wendell Carter Jr., Markkanen, and LaVine. And how anyone could expect, how you can build a chemistry in 16 games, it's so frustrating. And but let's assume,
go ahead. Going back to Boylan, I think, for me personally, if the Bulls were to start out slow next year, and I want to see what that number is on top of that extension years, because I'm pretty sure if they give him a nice, good extension, they're not going to fire him and pay, you know, him to go away and then bring in another coach. That's not how this organization operates. So I think if that extension number is about $3 to $4 million on top of what he gets, then I don't think there's any way possible that they'll let him go.
You know, I'm at the point now where there's no bigger defender of John Paxson than myself. I also do see the argument that he's been here a long time. You know, if this doesn't work out, well, I'll say it right now. If this iteration of the team doesn't evolve into a title contender, maybe it's time we go in a different direction. I believe they will. I think the core of Wendell Carter Jr., Laurie, and Zach LaVine is going to be very special, regardless of what happens in this draft. I mean, my gosh, if they add Zion, just we're going to be a steamroller eventually in 2 to 3 years. But
the question is Jim Boylan the coach of this basketball team when this team is championship ready?
Yeah.
Or is he that guy that will get this team from 23 wins to, you know, the seventh or eighth seed, and then you find your Phil Jackson or your Pat Riley or, you know, somebody that of that ilk that can come in and take this team from barely making the playoffs to being a championship contender every year in the East?
Yeah, I'm a big believer in saying players win titles. It's not the coaching. David Blatt had a great record in the NBA. That guy's a total dunce. And I think there's a lot of just pathetic coaches that have done very well due to immense talent on their roster. So I'm really, you can go through the Cavs list of head coaches over the past decade, and I'm sure you'll find a few that are at best average that, you know, spent time in the finals because of they happen to be coaching LeBron James. So
sure.
I don't think Jim Boylan's going to keep the Bulls from a title. What matters most to me is, you know, how these three core pieces develop. I think Otto's going to help immensely with that, and, you know, hopefully he'll be here in the long run. Who knows, you know, for certain, and whoever we add this year. These four players are going to have to really be, you know, develop into a title contender, and the coach is just something else outside of that, right? So I don't believe the Bulls went from 500 to in 2010 to a 60-win team. I think that by far the bigger reason was the development of Derrick Rose over Tom Thibodeau.
I know there's a lot of people who
disagree with that. Oh, Tom had a lot to do with it. Yeah, he was a very good coach, no doubt about it. But by far, that's like reason number nine. You can talk about the addition of Kyle Korver, who helped extend the floor, all those great players that they added off the bench, the evolution of Noah into a contributing player, of Taj Gibson in his second
year. Luol Deng,
actually, being Deng healthy. He was healthy. Exactly. Luol Deng was hurt for Vinny and Skiles every 5 minutes, you know, so... Yeah. He was finally healthy for Tibbs. And you know, so I think those things had far more impact on the quality of the Chicago Bulls than, you know, Ronnie Brewer, players like that, than Tom.
Right.
But, you know, he was definitely a good coach. Paul, it's great talking to you, man. Have a great evening, and looking forward to finding where we end up in the lottery. It's almost here. Less than 2 weeks away. What's your prediction for that?
As far as where the Bulls will pick or just the top three in general?
Where are they going to pick?
Honestly, I think pick anywhere between three and four.
At least three if we end up with R.J. Barrett. I mean, I think most people will come around to it and be excited if we end up with one of those three. But if it's at four or more.
I mean, if you're Cleveland, would you draft Ja Morant even though you already have Colin Sexton there?
Absolutely not. You're going to take R.J. Barrett. I made the same case with New York. I think New York, I mean, they Dennis Smith Jr., what are you going to do with him? You know, I mean, I think they're going to go with R.J. Barrett. I was just talking to a Knicks fan today on this topic, and he says he doesn't know what they're going to do. But, I definitely Cleveland, I think, would take R.J. Barrett at two, and then Ja would be there for three if we're there. But
regardless, the Bulls got to pick over his Suns, because that's the only other team that's in the lottery that needs a point guard. The Suns. So
the Lakers already have Ball. Yeah.
Ooh,
who knows? Maybe if we don't get lucky, he'll somehow fall to us. Either if we end up with him or Garland, I wouldn't be too upset.
No, I wouldn't either. But once again, you know, if it's anything past three or four, it's best player available at that point.
Yeah. Well, all I know is if I love DeAndre Hunter, and I know I don't want to be defending DeAndre Hunter for the next 2 years, as it would be very Valentine-ish situation, because I think he's going to be a very good pro, but I know I'm alone on an island on that one. So, anyhow, Paul, hey, man, have a great night, and look forward to talking to you again soon, bud.
Absolutely. You do the same, man.
Thanks for coming on. Talk to you
yeah,
later.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.